Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Sprague.
I really do believe they're either going to live up to the hype or they're going to have a very mediocre season.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt.
No, I'm not a bro.
And a little splash of Sprague.
Peekaboo.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Hope you got your espresso in your system, your energy drink, whatever it takes, green tea, water. Some people are just naturally caffeinated.
I don't get people who don't have to have any caffeine. Some people need it more than others, but the psychos out there that don't need a drop of caffeine, I don't know how you do it, man.
You should meet my friend John. It's unbelievable. He never drinks coffee or energy drinks. He just wakes up and he's like, all right, I'm ready to go.
What time's the wake-up alarm for him every day? Is he an early riser?
I think he's a 6 a.m.
So that's pretty early.
5:45,
we're psychotically early, but like, yeah. If you're waking up 5, 6 a.m., you're getting up pretty early every day. If you don't need caffeine there, what's going on inside your DNA?
Amen, buddy.
Can I have a little bit of that?
Were you born?
Give me a hit of that. Can I get a little hit of that?
Just drop a little blood.
Yeah.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour of this program. I don't know if I'm going to get to my Blazer stuff, so I don't know if I can rely on you to get to any Blazer stuff.
Don't worry, buddy. I got you covered, all right?
We have an inner city beefing of ownerships.
We do.
One ownership group that currently exists is suing a potential new ownership group that wants to exist.
Are they going to make me not like the team before they even start playing games? Why would you do this?
I don't think you should take it out on the team.
Okay, that's a fair point.
But you cannot like the ownership.
Yeah, I think I already don't. They don't even have a... Do they have a coach yet?
Nope.
Do they hire a GM yet?
They have a GM.
Okay, so we got a GM, but we don't have a coach.
We might talk to the GM
at some
point.
Come on the show?
Yeah. Let's have her on the show. That'd be great.
She's a P1.
Can we hire the coach?
Well, somebody got let go yesterday that is pretty noteworthy of two titles and might have a link to Sabrina, and you know what I mean?
Like, look, I don't think it's gone great for them. I think, you know, rekindling the old name when there were a lot of other really good options out there was kind of an 0-for-1 in my book, and now you're challenging my orange chicken? Now you're challenging my excitement over a Blazer sale? You're 0-for-2 in my book.
I think more they thought they were in line ahead of you, and they asked for the orange chicken as one of their sides,
and
they scooped it and went to the person behind them, and they said, yo, I'm literally in front of you in this line. That was my orange chicken.
That is a pretty demoralizing feeling at Panda when it's the last scoop of orange chicken and it's the person in front of you. Like, how long do I
disagree. You're going to get the fresh orange chicken.
But how long do I got to wait?
Not long, dude. That's know how to turn and burn
that
there.
That is true. They know what they're doing.
Fresh orange chicken, always better than the stale old orange chicken. That's what I always say. Get it tattooed on your body. So we'll get to that at some point today, a lawsuit developing. I want to start the second hour. Big news. I didn't see this live. Somebody texted it to me. Oklahoma announced that John Mateer broke his hand. He's out a month. He has to have surgery on his hand.
Yeah, they don't know exactly how many dates it's going to be.
They're saving
for him
a month.
I think they're saying that to be conservative. They don't want to give people the idea that he's going to be back in time for certain games. It's brutal. Like, he has been, like, the numbers don't necessarily jump off the page, but I think it's the two quality wins that he has, and the fact that when you watch them, he seems like their entire offense, and their win over Auburn.
100%.
I want to say he completed 15 of his last 16 passes in a scoring drive to win it. I think he was, like, 11-for-11 at one point in the fourth quarter. Like, he came on like a freight train late in that game. He did the same thing against Michigan a couple of weeks ago. This rattles up, one, the Heisman chase, which we talked about yesterday, being kind of a unique run this year where there's not one overwhelming favorite. The guys that we thought were going to be the guys coming into the year have been massive disappointments. Arch was probably the betting favorite to win it for a lot of people. That certainly doesn't look like it's going to happen right now. Mateer, in Vegas at least, was the favorite. The question becomes, is there any opportunity for a speedy recovery in him being back in 3 weeks? Because in 3 weeks, they play Texas, and they would love to have him back for Texas. Now, Hawkins, their backup, played last year. Remember, they benched Jackson Arnold. They brought him in. It didn't go great. He's a mobile athlete, can run around and make plays. I think they're better around him this year than they were last year. Their next game is against Kent State. They have a bye. They play Kent State, so they'll be fine in that game with Hawkins. The question becomes 3 weeks from now, can he play against Texas?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. He was the leader, as you mentioned, in the Heisman race until Mendoza went out, and Oklahoma, from him at least, and part of this is the injury now that we know that, is it wasn't the most amazing offensive performance. He was the number one because of his Michigan game, where he threw for 270, had a touchdown, and then he rushed for 74 yards.
He was their leading rusher, too, I think, in the game, was he not?
Quite literally, yeah, he was, by 50 yeah, yards. He was right. Quite literally their offense, and they beat a Michigan team,
A good Michigan team.
And so that made him the favorite. Mendoza goes out, they drop 63, Mendoza gets the benefit. I much like the World Series, much like the national champion, much maybe like the Super Bowl, bet at your own peril. There is not a right answer here. Although, wouldn't shock me if I painted a picture to you of Oregon goes in, beats Penn State, and Dante throws for 180 and two tuds and becomes a Heisman favorite.
It's usually the way the award works.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, I think there's a world that could exist with the way the landscape of the sport is. Now, it's still relatively early, right? We're only 4 weeks in. We're going into week five.
A lot of teams haven't played big games yet. Big games are a big determining factor here.
Well, and some guys will get benefits of late season big games. It's one thing for Ole Miss LSU to play this weekend. Maybe there's a separation that can happen for a Nussmeier, for example, if that game is in early November.
Yeah.
Because it's usually what the voters remember. As we see with the top 25, a lot of these people don't pay attention to the sport that they cover, and it shows itself. I think Heisman voting can be like that, too, at times. But we'll see. What this does is it adds a wrinkle. They might be A-OK if they're – now, you say Texas is in 3 weeks.
Yeah, so they got a bye, then they play Kent State in their last non-conference game at home, and then they play Texas in the Red River Rivalry. But so it's on October 11th.
If you're going by what they themselves are saying a month, he's not playing in that game.
He would not. But also, that's different if you're feeling good in 2 weeks and you're encroaching on that game, and all of a sudden he's in the locker room saying, Coach, I could go, I feel good. It changes the tune a little bit when you're going into that game.
He's more than likely, and I don't know if they can beat Texas without him.
Yeah.
They're at South Carolina. That seems like a tall order, a tall task, because South Carolina might be just playing for either spoiler or desperation to be, we can make the playoffs still.
Their season has not gone well.
You're more circling Ole Miss or at Tennessee if you play the schedule peekaboo game with this hand injury.
I mean, Oklahoma's back half of the schedule is absolutely brutal.
It's tough. You're Missouri, Bama, Tennessee, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Texas. Those are your last six games of your regular season.
It's a gauntlet.
That being said, I think this just kind of lends itself more to what we've talked about. Oklahoma could be okay without him. I don't know if I believe that. Here we go, man. Like, this is what the sport has turned into. It's not only equalized with the talent distribution and scattered everywhere, it's now like become a little version of the NFL.
For sure.
Who's healthy?
Yeah.
And right now, Oklahoma not losing John Mateer.
I mean, this was what we were hoping, I think, the season was going to be coming into the year. It was the idea that maybe the top has evened out more so than it has in a long time. Last year, you had Ohio State come into the year as the overwhelming favorite by everybody because of every player that returned for them, and they didn't look the part at chunks during the regular season. They lose to Oregon. They lose in shocking fashion to Michigan, but when they needed to, they were able to put it all together. This year, that team didn't exist. Like, for some, it was Penn State, but I never felt that way about Penn State. I know we're going to talk about them a lot today and the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
That you can say that they were the favorite coming in, that's fine. I didn't view them as this, like, oh my God, you're screwed. If they get it all together, you have no chance to beat Penn State because their talent is just going to overwhelm you. I never felt that way about them. And so you look to Texas. Could Arch be the second coming? It does not appear so. Maybe he's going to be fine, but he doesn't appear to be this runaway freight train that will keep Texas as a team that nobody can beat. Everybody else around the country, name me a team in the top 12 to 13 that doesn't have a flaw that you can pinpoint, because I can find one for each one of them. For as good as Miami has looked, at times their offense bogs down. And do you trust Carson Beck to pick up a big third down? Their defense has looked outstanding, but they also played a true freshman quarterback in CJ Carr in their first game. And Florida's offense is lost and cannot find any sort of light at the end of the tunnel. And so they haven't really been challenged in that regard. LSU's offense has looked clunky. Georgia had a 28-7 win over Austin Peay. They also got shredded defensively by Tennessee. Is that going to happen again if they play a team that can sling it? Like, I think you can go up and down the list of teams, even the ones that have quality wins, and say there's a flaw there. Now, the champion, we know the bunch of teams it's gonna come from, but it does seem as even as we hoped it was going to be coming into the year.
Who is the most flawless-looking team so far?
I mean, I think you would probably lean Miami. Probably.
Because the tough thing with the opponent of Oregon this weekend is they've played nobody, and I have no idea how much or little they've cared about game planning for those games versus just rolling out and saying, it's FIU, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I went back and watched the Penn State-Villanova game because I didn't see a lot of that live. And there's times that it's just like,
but I don't think they care.
Look good. And
right?
I don't think that's the determining factor of how their season's going to go.
Right.
Look at Oregon last year. They almost lost to Idaho and Boise State in the first 2 weeks, and then went 13-0 and won the Big Ten.
I know, but then they at least had you. I mean, look, I guess the final of Penn State could maybe say what I'm about to say, too, because of the scores in their games. But like, then they had the Oregon State game, and it was like, oh, the offensive line looks
corrected.
In week
three, yeah. They killed Oregon State in week three.
They demolished them, and they never looked back after that. I
would say, like, Miami and Georgia are probably the two teams for me right now, but Georgia's defense, they gave up how many downfield 15-yard, like, chunk explosion play completions.
How much of that, though, is, like, moment, road game?
Oh, I'm not saying it's easy, yeah.
Like, to make those catches is never easy, right? Everybody's expecting you to make it because you're in one-on-one in your receiver, but...
Right.
Is a moon ball catch a couple times like a given? And I know they gave up some points and some yardage, no doubt. And Aguilar looks the part for Heupel, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think you're overall.
Like Georgia might
right.
win the national championship this year. They might be the best 100%. Team in the sport. My point is just simply that there's not a team out there that you say, we don't have a chance against. If they play their best, we don't have a chance against them.
Well, this is why I am almost wondering, do we get a surprise team? I don't even know what would label a surprise for people, but like as a Texas Tech, in our minds, legitimately possible of being in the Final Four? Because
yeah,
they certainly
have
looked the part. Their defense looks pretty stout. They create turnovers. They have a good pass rush. Their offense, and we'll see what happens with this Hammond-Morton thing, but they can pass, they can run. Like they look like the part, but they're also in the Big 12, so I don't know how much people would lend them that kind of benefit. It's overall continuing, as you mentioned, to be a season where...
Could be anybody. And that's a lot of fun.
You might honestly be at 10 to 12 teams that you could talk yourself into. And it still may end up being Miami, Ohio State, Georgia. And for argument's sake, throw Oregon in there and you go, oh, those guys made it. No shocking development. I also do look at the Ole Misses, the Texas
A&M might throw in there for sure.
They
Florida
got a
State,
big one,
if Florida State beats Miami in a couple of weeks, man, like that game is next weekend.
They're in the driver's seat of their
Without
conference
a doubt
at that
they
point.
Are. Yeah. That would be too huge. You could. Who has a better resume than beating Florida State or beating Alabama and Miami in the first month of the season? Not many teams could say that.
Yeah.
I also think, like to your point on teams making it to the semis, like I think you're going to see this a lot in the playoff, and we see this in other postseason runs. Hell, locally, we dealt with this. A lot of it is where are you seated and what is your matchup? When the Blazers have made their only conference finals run in the last 25 years, why did they get there? Because they won the 82nd game of the season
matchups,
and they didn't have to play Golden State until the conference finals. They played them in the second round. We don't have a conference finals appearance since we blew it all the way back in the day, right? And so if you tell me Texas Tech gets in, and I know they've changed the format, but Penn State was in the semifinals last year. They had to beat SMU and Boise State to get there when they had to play a top five team in Notre Dame. They lost. And so you tell me Texas Tech gets a favorable matchup in the first round or, you know, the group of five teams somehow gets paired against them or there's a – like I wouldn't be shocked at all if that happened because I think they've upped their talent profile and a lot of it is how does the bracket shake out and can you benefit from it?
We'll talk a little Oregon-Penn State coming up at the bottom. Up next, we've got an open threat in college football. Does it mean anything? Next on 105.1, The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On Tuesdays, we do NFL Factoid Tuesdays. I have some numbers ahead of the Penn State-Oregon game I want to give you.
Ooh, I would love some numbers.
We'll talk a little bit about Oregon-Penn State coming up here at the bottom of the hour.
It was interesting to hear Pate. He previewed the game last night. We'll talk to him tomorrow on the show.
Yeah, we will have Josh Pate, Pate State University, at 7:40 as he's choosing to go to Alabama-Georgia instead of Penn State-Oregon.
I'm still upset about that. Two undefeated teams, wide out. You know, Georgia night games, I get it. I've never been. I'm sure it's incredible. Mm. Come on, man. Come on.
Well, maybe he's saving a Duck game for a certain L.A.-based team coming up here by the end of the year.
He's going to see that L.A.-based team because he's going to USC Illinois this weekend.
Well, touche, you're right.
Let's actually beat Illinois first, then we'll get there, USC, all right?
Well, big road game.
Big road game for them.
So, yeah, I don't pay much mind to it, but I do find when media members start making open threats, do I need to do this to Oregon State?
Oh, maybe that would help, yeah.
I dare you to keep him as coach.
Yeah, that'll make him listen. You got that kind of power behind that microphone.
Sure.
Look at you over there, power broker.
But remember Stephen A. threatening Kevin Durant live on television, we have lost the plot in this industry, and it's only made him more famous and more rich.
Yeah.
But he famously looked at a camera and told Kevin Durant, "You don't want to make an enemy out of me." As if he was going to go hunt him down or something.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
I didn't know what that was about. It was one of the weirder TV moments of all time. We have another one.
Oh, we got a threat. I didn't see this yesterday.
We have a college football threat on the SEC Network. Take a listen.
This is supposed to be a night to celebrate where the SEC is, but I'm getting angry listening to this conversation because, Greg, we're all dumbfounded by what we heard last year. And we have laid a marker from the SEC at the feet of the CFP, and they better deliver. And I'm not making threats because I don't have any more control over it than anybody else, but I know some people who do. And if they screw this up, they will be paying for it. And I don't know how or will, but they should, because this is unequivocal what the SEC has laid down tonight.
So there's a national SEC what got laid down? Puppet.
They announced they had a one-hour show on ESPN2 laying out how their new nine-game conference schedule is going to work.
Oh, the release, guaranteed opponents and all that? Okay.
Well, and so then they're also going to, remember, this year in the CFP, re-rank based on the ranking and not like conference champion. They're also going to use schedule metrics is what they said.
Yeah, they're going to weigh the strength of schedule more than they have in years past.
And so
that was already announced.
His non-threat, but threat because he knows people, which was like, oh, it's the dweeb kid who can't fight telling you he knows somebody that can.
I'm going to make a threat as a nerd on TV.
He's tight with Greg Sankey. Like, Sankey's told him off the air, if they screw us again, we're out.
They totally got screwed last year not having a three-loss team in the college football playoff.
Yeah, they didn't get screwed.
Well, to him and everybody else in the South, they did. You better not punish them. You better reward them. I understand that the SEC deserves a lot of the flowers and the love that they get. I get it. It means more.
Yeah.
This is stuff that is going to continue, and this is stuff that's going to continue to get more and more people hating the SEC if they don't have a fandom attached to it.
Well, I think a lot of people are already there, right? I think the SEC is they're in a little uncharted waters that they haven't been in a long time. They had a stranglehold on the sport for essentially two decades where it felt like every national champion from like the end of USC's run with Pete Carroll until, you know, a couple of years ago, like 90% of them were SEC teams. They had that stretch where they won like 12 straight national championships until Florida State finally broke through. Like, they've had a dominant run in college football, but that is now being challenged because everybody can pay players. And remind me again, what conference has won back-to-back national championships?
Big Ten.
The Big Ten has won back-to-back national championships. Do you know who are the three best odds right now in Vegas to win the national title? I think I saw this from Pate. I think it's Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon right now are the three best odds right now in Vegas to win the title.
Over Miami?
I believe so. I thought he had something about, like, imagine showing this graphic of the three best odds are in the Big Ten or something. Maybe it's Big Ten. Maybe I'm mistaken that. But anyway, three of the favorites right now are in the Big Ten, and I wouldn't be surprised if the conference won it again this year.
Yeah, it's Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, Georgia, Texas.
Texas still there, huh?
That can't be right.
So I just... It again shows you, like, I think the power balance is shifting, and they're trying to figure out this new landscape where everybody can cheat isn't the right word, but cheat the way that they used to cheat, right? And paying guys with bagmen. This is so stupid. What threat are we going to make? You're not going to go do your own thing.
I think that's what
they're not going to do their own
but
thing.
But I do think that's what he's alluding to.
Go have your SEC tournament. Everybody in the South will watch. Nobody around the country will watch Alabama play Georgia for a fourth time. Do your own little thing. Like, have fun with that. Nobody cares.
Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Georgia, Texas, Miami. Those are your
so the top three
six
top odds are all
odds.
In the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, Ohio State plus 550. Oregon plus 650.
That doesn't mean
Penn
anything.
State plus 650, Georgia 7-1, Texas 750, and Miami 16-1.
Like, this is a pretty simple formula. If you're 10-2 in the SEC and the Big Ten as a big time program, you're a lock to make the college football playoff. And if you're 9-3, you need some help depending on who you beat and who you lost to.
What I find mildly frustrating, I think, as a college football fan out west, it's not that they get benefit of doubt. It's not that they get the most love.
Mm-hmm.
What I find frustrating is it used to be a conference where they let it play out on the field and you earned what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're like to a point where it's become a clown show and you get these national people to go on and basically get ahead of excuse making. You better not screw them if they lose three times. Texas better be in there.
Right.
And I'm like, you wouldn't have that opinion if Texas was a Big 12 team. You'd probably cook them on national television if they were in the Big 12.
You're not going to make that argument if Penn State's a three-loss team this year.
No.
Or Ohio State's a three-loss team this year. Or Oregon's a three-loss team this year.
So, like, I get that he's in the South. He's bread and butter is the SEC. I understand that part of it. I guess what I'm just frustrated by is it feels like a conference that used to tell everybody to pull yourself up by the bootstraps and work hard and earn everything.
Walk uphill to school.
And now they're like, oh, you better just give it to us.
Give me my handout, baby.
And I find that wildly frustrating as somebody that watches this sport and sees teams that never get a benefit if they even lose the one time. It's like, oh, they're fraudulent. They're in the ACC. It's like, yeah, okay, but like... why does the three-loss SEC team get a benefit when they lost to Kentucky at home?
Sure.
That's what I find frustrating.
I find it frustrating, too, because I think there's a fun, nuanced conversation in which there is no right answer on judging resumes and what matters more to you. Because the reality is, in college football, you're going to have unbalanced schedules. And it leads to debates at the end of the year of teams with maybe a better win-loss record who don't have any quality wins, or teams who have one or two more losses. Two more is probably a bad example, but say one more loss, right? That's in the SEC, but they have three quality wins under their belt, but maybe one bad loss that's mixed in there. Like, to me, that's a nuanced debate that we can have as college football fans of what's more important to you, what metrics should weigh more. And everybody's going to approach it a different way and have a different thing that they say, well, this is the reason why, or that's the reason why. That's a fun debate to have. But when you make it so draw the line in the sand, this side or that side, don't screw us, and every SEC team who doesn't make it got screwed, like, there's not an SEC team that got screwed last year. There wasn't. If there would have been, if Alabama didn't lose at the end of the season to Oklahoma the way that they did, there would have been a very interesting debate about a 10-2 Bama team who had a marquee win over Georgia, who went on to win the conference, right? That had quality wins under their belt, blew out LSU on the road, but they had that one head-scratching loss to Vanderbilt. Like, what was going on there? If that was their resume at the end of the year, it would have been a fascinating debate to see how it played out. Then they went on the road and got smoked by Oklahoma, who didn't have a functioning offense. And all of the debate went out the window. So this idea as if they got left out or they were screwed over is just laughable, and it's dumb, and it's not based in reality. If there's a team that should be pissed off about getting left out of the playoff last year, I would argue there's two of them. It should have been 10-2 BYU, who had a great schedule. They beat multiple playoff teams, if I'm not wrong. And Miami was 10-2. They just got left out because they happened to not play in the ACC title game, but they were 10-2. That's better than 9-3 in some of the other SEC teams. So To me, there's a fun debate to be had about what's more important to you. Is it just simply win-loss record? Is it strength of schedule? Is it strength of wins? Mm. Everybody will approach it differently, but the way that they handle this debate makes it seem like it's black and white and there's no middle gray area for disagreement or debate.
I want to ask about one element in terms of playing teams that I want to talk about with you today, and then we'll get to Oregon and Penn State. I got some numbers on this game. I find a lot of narrative-based stuff very interesting going in. And one element that Adam Rittenberg agreed with me on about this matchup. We'll get to all that coming up next. I got some numbers on Oregon Penn State I want to get to. Also, Elise Woodward at the top of the hour, Husky sideline reporter. What does she make of the Ohio State Buckeyes coming to Montlake?
We'll get second that. Longest winning streak in the country. Washington does.
How about that?
There's a chance this weekend that Oregon could have the longest winning streak, home winning streak in the country.
And a buddy texted me earlier during our NFL segment and said, Dirt hates winning teams. He's a Duck fan. It's very odd.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I'm not defending it.
That's basically what I tell people if they ever question something. I mean, none of us make sense as sports fans all the time.
No, I hate NFL teams that are in the Super Bowl a lot. I get tired of them.
Well, you know, the good news is you may not be able to count on your NFL team every year, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's $2.50 a month, according to the math gods. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started. I need a free account. I need Odyssey to give
you
me
want
a
free
Paramount
Plus account so you can watch your soccer team play.
Nottingham Forest is in the UEFA Europa League today.
I mean, I'm glued to the UEFA Europa.
It's at noon. There's a game that can be on. I watch
can't
sports.
Wait to watch the UEFAs.
UEFA.
The wafers?
No, UEFA. Europa League.
UEFA.
It's a tournament, but they call it a league.
Got it.
Let's not get into the weeds. It still doesn't make all the sense
so
in the world.
I want to do a YouTube series with this with you two. Be so
why would you add him to that?
Yeah, don't add me to
he
this.
He doesn't want
I
you
don't
to
care.
Do that.
I yeah, don't care.
Exactly.
To each their own. I'm happy you're happy.
Thank you. Love is love. We'll get to the numbers of Penn State, Oregon. I promise.
Yeah.
Sorry. But you just reminded me, I don't think we've talked on the show about the SEC slated rivals.
We have not. Yeah, they're automatic opponents every year.
Yeah.
Their 9-game conference schedule got announced, so they're going to play every year.
So, one, your thoughts kind of taken away looking at some of the rivals or the every year opponent. And two, how much longer until the Big Ten does this, and will that be automatically
now? Yeah.
Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA to make the most. Are we going to do?
They have built-in games in the Big Ten. I don't know if I think it's just one though. Yeah,
you I think just it's just the one.
Just the one.
Yeah, it's your main Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, Washington.
I mean, I'd be okay if they expanded it, but we know the three teams that Oregon would and the West Coast teams would get would be the West Coast teams.
Or do you think they're going to move to it? Is what I'm asking.
I mean, from a travel standpoint, it would make sense. I think a lot of the coaches are complaining about kick times and travel times, but it's like, this is what you wanted. This you killed a conference to get 18 teams. You go from Los Angeles to, you know, Piscataway, so it's a long ways away. I'd be okay if they went with it, and Oregon played USC, UCLA, and Washington every year. UCLA is an automatic win. They will play Washington every year, and USC would be fun. They haven't beat us in a decade, so I'd love to play USC every year, too.
Well, Tennessee's going to get Bama, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt guaranteed every year.
Yeah, I mean, you go through them, and it's hard to, like...
Florida has Georgia, South Carolina, and Kentucky.
Yeah, some of them are random. I saw there was an Elko clip at A&M, and he was like, I don't know how the hell Missouri got in our bunch, but whatever. I guess we'll play them every year, because I think there's so many different rivalries that people know about and don't know about. Like, Alabama-Tennessee is a massive rivalry, the third Saturday in October.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of Alabama rivals, you probably think of the Iron Bowl first, and you think of LSU games, and you think of Georgia games who they're playing this weekend.
LSU not included in their
rivalry.
They're
not, but they got Tennessee, and so there's no right answer here. You're trying to protect as much as you can. Ultimately, I think it's a great thing for the sport that they're going to 9 conference games. It's laughable that they got away with the amount of time that they did playing 8. And now I'm going to point the finger at the Big Ten. It's laughable that the Big Ten, who already mandates 9 conference games, which is great, they need to take the next step and have to play 10 Power 4 games. It doesn't mean it's always going to be a great opponent. Hell, Oregon played Oklahoma State in non-conference this year, and they might be the worst team in all of college football. So some years it's going to benefit you, and you play a back half or bottom tier Power 4 team, but that should be the next mandate. And the Big Ten, I think, is on the clock to get in line with what the SEC has done and now what the ACC has announced.
Could you answer this question for me? Riddle me this, Batman.
Yeah.
Why is Florida Georgia listed as a neutral site? They're just never going to play at each
other. They always play a neutral site, yeah. But it's like, always been.
Why?
I don't know the backstory.
What's the
of
answer
that.
To that? Why would you not have it in Athens or Gainesville?
Why does Oklahoma and Texas play in Dallas every year? Some rivalries are just that way. I
well,
don't
that's
understand
based
why.
A fair, isn't it? Isn't it?
It's a state fair.
The state yeah. fair, and I don't know if that's a good answer. I'm. Just...
I'll see if I can find why they started doing that. I tend to like Notre Dame. We talked about this in Notre Dame USC.
Yeah.
It would be a disaster for me to move that game to a neutral site. Part
I agree.
Of what's made it great for so many years is the fact that it's been the home sites and the games that you remember are Notre Dame growing the grass to 10 inches long and Matt Leinart getting pushed into the end zone. Like, those are memories that we have from that rivalry, and to take that away would be ridiculous. I don't know why Florida Georgia started playing. It's the world's largest cocktail party. That I know is what they call it, but I don't know why they started playing it in Jacksonville.
So maybe there's something based around Jacksonville that has that? The way that Oklahoma, Texas does? Because other than that, I can't think of the reason.
It began in 1933 because it was a convenient neutral site with railroad access for both fan bases, becoming a lucrative large-scale event for both schools and the city.
If you're going to include railroad as an answer there, you need to change your thinking.
Maybe we move the game to Athens and Gainesville. Maybe it's okay to play on a campus.
I mean,
is that what you're telling me?
Would it be to see Bulldogs in the swamp?
I mean,
and
it's
see
way
the
better.
Gators in Athens.
Look, Pate loves to do the thing of like, if I'm commissioner, these are the things that I'm going to eliminate. The first thing that I would eliminate: Sands.
Neutral site games.
Two. I think I would allow Oklahoma and Texas to continue in Dallas for the state fair, because there's something about playing that game at the Cotton Bowl that I enjoy.
Yeah, maybe we're being hypocritical here, calling one out by being okay
I know.
With the other, but
they're just like, yeah. I'll allow that one. As a commissioner, I'll allow that one, and I'll allow Army-Navy to continue at whatever NFL venue, usually in Philly, but I know they move it around from time to time.
Right.
Those are allowed. Every other neutral site game gets eliminated immediately.
I would add
executive order.
I would add home playoff games more than what they do now.
That would be a great
too,
second step. Look at us making college football better.
I mean,
it's not that hard.
I was going to say,
so no more kickoff classics, no more Dublin games.
None of them.
No more.
No. Okay. None of them. They all suck. They're I don't want
stupid.
International games. I don't need NFL international games. I don't need college international games. There is nothing worse in that sport than neutral site games. Nothing.
The
it
SEC
is the thing.
Bias?
I would rather deal with SEC bias than neutral site games.
Okay.
Your team had a home game against BYU on the books. Is that the biggest home game of all time? No.
It's a good one.
It's a decent home
Our
game.
Our D coordinator coming back
yes.
to take us on. Bring it on, Sataki.
Here comes Sataki back into town, yep. right? They got a $2 million paycheck to move that game to Las Vegas.
Yes, they did.
How many Beaver fans are going to fly to Las Vegas to watch that game? I'm sure there will be some, because Vegas is a fun place to go.
Well, not lately.
But it's
a lot
not,
of people not going to Vegas.
Not the same as playing at home. But hey, I'm going to drive 45 minutes down the highway and go watch Oregon State play. A little bit easier than let's fly to Vegas, stay at a hotel, mm-hmm. lose some money gambling, watch our team probably lose, and then fly back to Portland.
Everybody wins when they go to Vegas, though. They always tell you that. Oh,
right.
I paid for my trip. It's probably my favorite thing I hear every time from somebody. I paid for my trip. Oh, like, did you? You did, huh?
For the games that I've gotten to go to, I've gotten in the last handful of years to go see. I went to the Oregon LSU game back in the day against in Dallas. I went to the Oregon Auburn game in Dallas, and I went to the Oregon Georgia game in Atlanta. There, I would choose playing in Baton Rouge, wherever town is Auburn in Auburn, Alabama. Is that the town? I can't remember. And then Georgia in Athens. Like, give me the home stadiums and getting to experience those. Imagine Oregon Penn State this weekend playing at Ford Field.
Yeah, Oregon Penn State at Providence Park.
Yeah, right.
What's happening here?
No, it's a wideout. That's what makes college football great.
We'll see. I think the rivalry thing will get implemented. It's just like this scheduling thing, right? 9 games every conference. I think this is the next thing.
I'd be okay if the Big Ten did it.
Yeah, it makes... You need geography to matter if you're not going to care about where these teams are based for different... Like Cal and Stanford.
Yeah.
Make it happen, ACC.
I mean, they're
That's
only
tough.
They
but.
Play each other every year. They don't have anybody else close to couple up with. That's the
Make
problem.
Sure they play SMU.
I guess that's the next
that's
closest,
the closest
yeah.
team you can get.
You can fly out to Dallas or something. I actually will at least defend the Big Ten in the short term in this. I do like the idea, at least for a handful of years, letting everybody play everybody. And then if you want to pare it down, I think that's probably the wise move.
Hmm.
But like, we had this stat when the SEC announced it, that isn't it like A&M and Georgia have never played each other?
Yeah,
or Georgia's never been to A&M.
Never been to A&M.
And they've been in the SEC since like 2011 or 2012.
So I think over the next 3 to 4 years, like everybody will have a home and home against everybody in the Big Ten. And so at least like check all those off. So then you played everybody and you've seen the stadiums and all, you've experienced it all. And then if you want to go to 3 guaranteed opponents, I'm cool with it.
I got some numbers for Oregon, Penn State. Let's talk about that game a little bit more. Coming up next, Elise Woodward at the top of the hour for the Daily Ticker. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in. Elise Woodward at the top of the hour. We have a local lawsuit between ownership group. That's fun. We'll get into that today.
Cats and dogs are fighting. Brother and sister can't get along.
I wanted to talk Oregon-Penn State. We had Adam Rittenberg on yesterday.
Yes,
and
we did.
I didn't know where he was going to go with the Oregon-Penn State game, as many are saying game of the year potential. We had talked about it before we talked to him, and I know it's a lot about Oregon's rush defense. I just keep looking at the numbers, and I'm like, I think this is going to be more based on the pass protection and the rush attack of Penn State's defense against Oregon's offensive line.
Very well could be.
Maybe more so than even the defensive line of Oregon against the running attack of Penn State, but we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Well, to your point, Oregon gave up 297 rushing yards in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah.
And how did they do in the game?
Right.
They won it.
They won. So. If Dante has time to pass, I know we have questions about who's the number one. Like, I think he'll be able to find guys.
Yeah.
So here's some numbers from Ben Stevens, who covers the Big Ten. Penn State is 11-6 in full wideout games.
Okay. They haven't played a big team in a wideout game in a while. They've been really pissed off about that.
Second ever top 10 wideout.
Yeah.
OSU in 2018.
Okay.
Okay.
That sounds right.
Penn State is 4-20 against the AP top 10 teams with James Franklin. 2-17 against Big Ten AP top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Both of those wins, by the way, in the 19 games came in 2016.
So they're both in one season a decade ago.
And Oregon, this is an interesting note.
Ooh, what do you got?
1-3 straight up against the spread as a dog with Dan Lanning. They are 3.5-point underdogs.
I'm trying to think of the times they've been a dog. The Georgia game, definitely a dog.
Correct, Amundo.
I'm assuming the Rose Bowl last year they were a slight underdog against
Ohio State.
What would the third one have been? The first Washington game, were they an underdog in that game in Seattle?
I believe.
Because the Pac-12 title game, they were a 10-point favorite.
I thought they were a 3-point favorite at Husky Stadium, but it might have
been. There's got to be a third one in there somewhere.
It might have been the Husky game.
Right.
So I went and looked at the schedule, and I don't think there's an argument here. This is far and away, if we're not counting Georgia, okay, because it was neutral site, this is easily the biggest road game of Dan Lanning's Oregon career.
Yeah, I mean, the Husky ones were pretty big. The Husky one 2 years ago was a pretty big deal. I think that was the first time the two teams were ever ranked in the top five, and I hate that program with a passion, a deep-rooted passion.
Well, this is an opportunity for him to have his first great road win as the head coach of Oregon.
Without a doubt. It would be a massive road win for him to be able to pull it off. I also think it's funny, like, when you mention some of these numbers on the other side of it, like, I was thinking about this last night. There is so much pressure on Penn State side, and not that there's not any pressure on Oregon. There's always pressure when you play in a big game, and if Oregon loses, especially if they lose by a couple of scores, like, of course, the conversation on Monday will be exactly what we think the conversation will be on Monday if they lose by, 38-21 score, and it's never really that close. Penn State has not beaten a top five team in 10 years.
Dan Lanning beat two of them last year. Penn State was one of them. He won the Big Ten, beating Penn State to do it, and he beat Ohio State, who was ranked, what, number two or three or whatever it was at the time, when they were able to knock him off. Being 4-20 against top five or top 10 opponents in your career as a head coach, there is a sense of urgency on their side, and it was funny to listen to Pate talk about it last night in previewing the game of, he basically boiled it down to, they have to win this game. They have to. They have been begging for a big game in the whiteout, because last year, remember who their whiteout game was against?
I don't.
The whiteout game was against Washington last year because the Ohio State game got selected Washington as a big nooner,
that's
and they
right.
were
they
pissed because they wanted it to be a night game and a whiteout. So they haven't played. They haven't had one of these whiteout games in a top five matchup, to your point, in a very long time since Ohio State was there, what, seven, 8 years ago. It's been a long time. They brought all their guys back. They were the favorite coming in. They don't have a great track record against top five opponents under James Franklin. That's been the biggest monkey on his back. Remember the fan reaction when they lost at home to Ohio State last year? And what they were yelling at him running off the field and the questions he had to answer. So, of course, there's pressure that exists on both sides, but there is a lot of heat on their side of, like, you got to win this game.
You know what? I have seen this narrative, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but what I would say is I actually think both points can be accurate. And how you weigh that, I'm not going to make anybody weigh things however they don't want to. Penn State doesn't largely beat the most amazing teams. That's kind of the James Franklin era is how I would describe it. Oregon has a little bit of this for people outside of this bubble, and that's 100% factual.
Sure. Not to the level of Penn State, though.
No, but they were undefeated last year and got absolutely obliterated in the Rose Bowl,
and
they're coming in now, and I know the underdog thing kind of plays, but it also kind of doesn't because they're still pretty high ranked, they're pretty high thought of analytically, and so, yeah, they're going to go on the road, and if they lose, we're going to say, well, it's a tough place to win, there's no doubt. We got to wait for context. James Franklin has pressure. I also think there is a huge portion of college football fans that view Dan Lanning and the Ducks under some form of pressure of, can you win that game?
Oh, every big program has pressure in every big game. Like, that's not, I'm not trying to say Oregon skating in here without
no, but I feel
pressure.
I do feel like it's becoming a localish narrative of, like, there's all the pressure on just Penn State, and if Oregon loses, so what? And I don't think that's how the rest of the landscape is going to be.
It will not
that.
Be so what. There's no way anybody's going to say so what. But the other part of this reality is, who does Penn State still have to play this year?
Ohio State.
They have to go on the road
in
and play Ohio State.
Yeah.
And if they lose at home to Oregon, and then they have to go on the road to Penn State, I don't think anybody's going to pick them to win that game based on their track record against Ohio State. And so you're looking at a 10-2 season with two conference losses and likely no conference title game appearance, and that would be a disaster for them. This is the year that they've built for. They brought everybody back. Their quarterback's back. Their running backs are back. They got the wide receivers. They got the defense. This is their year. They were the favorite coming into the season.
I think the tough part of this, too, is like whether you dive into the pressure of what coach is under the microscope of the college football world for this game. The unfortunate nature, and I'm saying that as a pro-expansionist here, the unfortunate nature is either one can lose and season's not over.
It doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things
well,
for either team.
But yeah, but that's kind of what I'm saying, though,
sure.
is like I think Franklin absolutely has more. I also think Oregon and Lanning have it, but it kind of doesn't matter regardless. Because Penn State could still end up losing to Ohio State at Ohio State, and Oregon can still trip up one more time, and both will be in the playoffs.
Yes, they will.
And that's kind of my point.
And I would point to, look, the Lanning stuff, there's no doubt there's noise on him, and the Rose Bowl was ugly. I don't disagree with any of that. James Franklin has been at Penn State since 2014.
Yeah, those numbers I gave you are pretty... They're pretty
good. He has beaten four top 10 teams since 2014. Dan Lanning beat two of them in the top five last year.
His two top...
Including James Franklin and Penn State in the
Big Ten
title game.
His two in the Big Ten in the 19 games he's had came in 2016.
Yes.
It's almost 2026.
So that's where it's like, I get it. I know that Monday people will say, what's wrong with Lanning? And can't, like, I understand what the narrative will be. These two things are not comparable. They're just not. This guy's been there a decade. He hasn't beaten a top five or top 10 team in a decade. What was the best win that they had last year? Boise State?
Well, regular season? I'd have
At
to think
all.
About that.
Who was their best win last year?
It would have been the playoff game.
Okay. Boise State was their best win?
Boise
Who else
State.
Beat Boise State last year?
Oregon.
These two things are not the same. I think the pressure is 85-15 from
an 85-15
from a non-bias angle, from the look of the country at this game, for how long he's been there and everything that they had coming back. I think it's 85-15 on Penn State.
We can get back into this, the pressure cooker of Oregon and Penn State in the whiteout game this weekend. It's got juice, man. I'm pretty excited for this game to see how it's all going to shake out. Let's take a pause. Daily Ticker top of the hour. Elise Woodward is going to join us, sideline reporter for the Washington Huskies. How does she view Ohio State coming to Montlake? We'll talk with her about it. Daily Ticker Hour number 3, Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.